Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's. Mm-hmm. But the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the strawberry watermelon refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer.
We're talking about a total game changer. It's made with Red Bull. It's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're going to need it. Kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Welcome to Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randall. Dive into the live courtroom drama as we bring you unfiltered audio from one of the most riveting trials of the year. Accused of multiple marital murders, Randall's fate unfolds before us. Join us as we navigate the testimonies, the tension, and the truth behind the headlines. This is Dark Vows.
All right, we are back on the record. The C250966 State Nevada versus Thomas Randolph. For the record, that Mr. Randolph was present as an attorney, deputy district attorney on behalf of the state. You both parties taking this in the presence of our jury.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
All right, Mr. Randolph, are you ready?
I am here.
Whenever you're ready, you can begin your rebuttal.
Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, as I told you at the very beginning of this case, it is really, really hard to plan the perfect murder. And now that you've seen all the evidence, you can see how difficult it was for Mr. Randolph to try to pull this off. Because when you looked at all the evidence, now that you've heard it all, it is abundantly clear he completely failed. He completely failed. Why? Because his story doesn't add up. It doesn't add up with what you see physically at the scene. It doesn't add up in the manner in which he discusses his wife. It doesn't add up with how he treats his wife. It doesn't add up when you see the insurance policies. It doesn't add up when you start thinking about his relationship with Michael Miller. None of it makes sense. If you're painting the story that you're the victim. But in this story, he's not a victim. He's a villain. He has hatched this plan to get rid of his wife, get out of debt, go off with his girlfriend, and take $332,000 and a home. That was the plan. But he got caught. The credibility of a witness. This is a really, really important instruction. You should consider someone's manner upon the stand, their fears, their motives, their interests, the reasonableness of their statements, and the strength and weaknesses of their recollection. And here's the best part. If you believe someone has lied about any material fact in the case, you may disregard the entire testimony of that witness or any portion of his testimony, which isn't proved by other evidence. And that, ladies and gentlemen, when we start evaluating the statements that he makes in these walkthroughs, is a problem. Because it's not proved by other evidence. It's contradicted by other evidence. It's repelled by other evidence.
Judge, that instruction deals with witness, not the defendant's statement to police.
I can move on.
Yeah, well, ladies and gentlemen, that instruction does deal with the credibility of the witnesses who testified to police.
So, what does he have to say about this?
I'm a cocky fucker. Always have been. But I'm also really nice and generous. I'm reasonably honest.
He's really honest. The defense closing claims that the shooting happened just as the defendant said it did. Well, let's take a look at this. This are the shots that Dr. Gavin explained to us, right? What we can see here, there they are, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. We don't know the exact order, but what we do know is this. When you look at shots 1, 2, 4, and 5, they all come on the left side of Michael Miller's body. And here's what's really interesting, right? So make sure I don't forget my left and my right. So you got this first shot, right? It's coming in from the left temple. See, I'm doing it wrong again. It's coming in from the left temple, and it's going across the head and up, right? From the left. You got the second one from the left side, and it's coming straight down, right? You got the fourth shot, which is coming in the left side, and it's lodging in his abdomen. You got a fifth shot that's penetrating through that elbow and through the forearm, and it's coming out in this direction. And then lastly, you have a third shot that's entering up an abdomen to the right, and it's going essentially straight up in the air like this. That's really, really important. This, the directionality of these shots. Why? Watch where he says he is, and watch where he says Miller is.
And as we got up in here, he kind of rushed up on me a little bit. And that's when I just pushed him. Boom, boom, boom. He started going out toward the shed. I don't know how many times I shot him, but I just kept right on going. Boom, boom, boom. And he just lay in there. Just lay in there, no?
So, you've seen the other videos where if you're in the position of Mr. Randolph kind of standing in that doorway, he says, Miller is across from him. He's facing this direction. If we're at a diagonal angle here, ladies and gentlemen, where is my left side? It's here. If you're shooting from this angle at me, how in the world does shot number one go through my left temple and up in the air? That's not a thing. That defies physics. Look at shot number two. If I'm standing here at the left and there's an initial volley of shots, how in the world am I getting shot from up here and it's coming straight down? That's not happening either. Look at shot number four. If I'm standing at this angle and I'm being shot here and it's lodging through, how is that bullet curving? What is this, like JFK and the magic bullet? It's not a thing. It defies physics. And then look at shot number five. That shot is actually coming from the back of the elbow and out. The only other shot that actually direction out, like direction-wise works, is shot number three. It's here. Except it's going straight up towards the ceiling. How is that possible? The answer is it's not. It's not. It just isn't. And just looking at this, we know what he said makes no sense whatsoever. But again, what direction would he really need to be? Think about it for a second. What does he say happened? He says, oh, he's walking away from Sharon. He turns towards me. I push him, and then he's kind of moving this way. And then maybe ultimately, once the firing, he kind of turns and starts making his way. If all these shots are on the left, with the exception of shot number three, you know what direction Mr. Miller has to be looking to be hit by any bullet if he's in that doorway? He has to be looking at Sharon. He has to be looking at Sharon. That's how you could maybe get shot number four, if he's looking at Sharon. But here's the thing. It didn't happen the way he said it happened. It happened in the garage, and he didn't tell the police how it went down in the garage. He concocted this story. Words matter. Words matter. And his words don't add up.
And when I heard that noise, it really did scare me. I went, boom, boom! Except the door didn't come down. It stayed just like it was open. I actually got close. Boom, boom!
So, let's look at that shot, right? In this version, Miller's on the ground. His feet are going back towards Sharon. You've seen the photos. You've seen the pools of blood. Miller's head is kind of right in front of the fender of that car, right? But if you look at, he is saying that's when he does the two headshots from the fire extinguisher. We'll get to that, right? That's what he says. So if you've got a left shot going up and across your head, but your head is here, how in the world, if he's at your feet and he's shooting like this, how does he do that? He said he's on the ground. How is that possible? It's not. It is not. What he said happened did not add up. That makes no sense. Is it a dynamic situation? Yeah, probably. When you double cross a guy who you thought, hey, I'm going to get some money here, they're probably hanging out of the garage and he just double crosses them. So is there some dynamics in the garage? Absolutely. But here's the thing. We don't know because he didn't tell that story. He invented this other thing that doesn't add up. But the last headshot is left in going down. If Miller is lying with his head by the fender, how is that possible? He says those two headshots are done on the ground. Not while he's falling, remember, because the fire extinguisher scared him so much that he did a couple more finishing shots. That gunshot, if Miller is truly on the ground with his feet towards Randolph, with his feet towards Sharon, that bullet is coming back towards Tom. How is that a thing? It's not. Why? Because it's not true. It didn't happen the way he said it happened. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the first little step that you can look at. It's not a little step. It's a huge step where you can move towards, we have proven this case beyond a reasonable doubt, just by taking him at his word. Taking him at his word. He's already guilty of this. And the ski mask. There's a lot of talk by the defense about, oh, look at the linen and the tying and this and that. Maybe it really is, maybe it is just the one that the Millers described that they had. Don't miss the forest for the trees. Here's the deal with the ski mask. He says it's perpetually on until the very end. He notices it off in the aftermath. But this is what Randolph says.
I was actually in the room and he came in and kind of bumped into each other and he had his, had the mask down. But like, it wasn't on, you could tell it was black. Because it wasn't all the way down. It was like maybe to here or something. Maybe it pushed it up.
Maybe to here. Maybe to here. He's not saying it's draped on his shoulder or it's sitting right here at the top. He's saying it's down at least here. He says, oh, I can recognize him because I can see the chin, but the mask is here. Think about the two headshots. One's coming down and the other one's going across. The mask should catch those shots. But they're not there.
I might push this mask up because I'm taller when we came in here.
Well, you'd be pushing it down, though, he's short.
Pardon me?
You'd be pushing it down, not up, right?
Well, I'd be pushing it kind of sideways. I wasn't, like, knocking it off or anything with my hands.
So probably hit him in the back of the head? Could you tell it was Mike yet?
I knew it was Mike, because of his chin.
Exposed.
But I don't know if he had his mask on then. It seems like he still had his mask on then.
He
had his mask on there for sure.
Well, when you're back here, and you squared off on him, you still have his mask on?
Yeah.
Okay. Then when he went between him now turning and he continuing to shoot and him going to the ground, he still got his mask on.
I think so. And as I remember, the mask wasn't all the way down. It was like rolled up, one rolled up right here. Mm-hmm.
And that's the point, folks. That mask is on during this firefight. Using his words. He notices it afterwards. To be fair to him, he says, oh, I mean, after it was over, I did kind of notice it lying next to him. But he never described in any of these interviews, like, the process of removing it. The state would submit to you that what happens is this. Miller wears the mask so he doesn't have to be face-to-face with Sharon. Using your common sense, and that's an instruction. You don't have to leave it at the door. There's something called guilt, right? There's probably, and think about, here's something, you can give it whatever weight you want. But remember Michael Byer? What he said at Easter time, which is a couple days before this all goes down. He said, it looked like Miller was thinking about something or concerned or something was right. He's literally, think about that. Miller's literally sitting, breaking bread with this woman that he's about to execute. Think about that for a second. Could that be a reason why you wear the mask? And then think about this, right? Then once the job is done, it's like, great, I can pop that off. I got my baseball cap that I actually always wear. I got my change of clothes because this isn't really a burglary. I'm just lying in wait for this woman. So he takes the mask off and then he double crosses it. And that's why it drops by the side of his body. That's why there's no holes in the mask because he's not wearing it when he shoots him. They're probably just chit-chatting. So the real question on all the mask up is, where are the bullet holes and the blood on the mask? And if the answer is they ain't there, that means his story ain't true. Facts can be inconvenient sometimes. And they are stubborn. And there's no getting around this. That is a problem for the defendant. And there are even more problems. Here's one. Defendant's story about 911 locating the gun near Miller versus the actual 911 call regarding locating the gun near Miller. Let's take a listen. Here is how he describes it. Him talking to 911 when he finds the gun near Miller.
And I'm talking to the guy, and I said, I don't see the gun. I says, there's some bags of stuff here. I says, there's my bag. I says, I'm into bags, and he's got one of my bags. And it's the bag that is in there on the living room table that, I think it's a Walmart bag. And he says, well, find the gun. It has to be in there.
Find the gun. It has to be in there. There's my bag. Remember, a lot of back and forth going on. He continues.
And I went over here looking to see if I could see the gun. And about that time, the timer went off garage door, and it just went black in here, and it just scared the living hell out of me. So I got back about right here and just kind of stepped real big because I knew he was over there, and turned the door back on, turned back around, told him I couldn't find it. He told me it has to be there. If he had a gun, it has to be there. Carefully roll him over and see if it's there, or something about rolling him over. And I just put my foot on him and up on the shoulder and kind of pushed on him and kind of tilted that way. And when he did, then he kind of went like this. And I reached down right here. Let's see, if he was laying this way, it would have been this hand. It would have been this hand. Because he was laying something like this, but on his head. And when I pushed him over, then his hand dropped down, and it was right here under this hand. He wasn't holding it, but it was in, his hand was right by it. He was holding it, I'm assuming, but he wasn't holding it then. And I picked it up by the, I think by the wood part on it. And brought it in here, told the guy I got the gun. He said, throw it, put it somewhere in another room where it's safe, and lock the door. So I locked the door. Except this is a lot faster.
Right. What a story. I look down. Here's my bags. It's in the bag. It should be there. You got to keep looking. I don't know. I'm going to step over. Oh, the light. Still on the phone. Can't seem to find it. I got to step back over him. Oh, 911, you should nudge him over, but carefully. Okay, I'll do it. And then, you know, I dig down in there and found it, right? That's the story he chose to tell.
Wait for it. Let's actually listen to 911.
So I'm going to put this thing down and get my gun.
Does one sound a little different than the other? Absolutely. They're not even close. That's not even close. There's no back and forth. There's no encouragement from 911. None of that. It didn't happen. Which brings me back to what Ms. Weckerly said, the unreliable narrator. Because literally, it's a house of cards. And it's literally collapsing. Every time you start to fact check him, it's a problem. It's a problem for him. That didn't happen. What he said happened in the walkthrough is a fantasy. It did not happen. And I would submit to you, I don't think this distinction is what their defense expert would suggest as being like a slight deviation. That's huge. But it sounds good, right? It sounds traumatic. It paints him as the hero. You've got to find that gun, sir. You can do it. And I found it. Yay. That's the whole deal. But there was something else he said in there, which I don't know if you guys noticed. He said something about the gun. What he said was, I'm going to get my gun. You may not have noticed it, but we're going to play it again. Now, what you need to understand is timing. Context is key. At this point in the phone call, he calls and says, my wife's been shot. They transfer FD to do medical, and then he offers a suggestion of, instead of me doing CPR, maybe I should go find this guy's gun, right? He doesn't know at this point what gun it is, because he hasn't located it yet, right? He hasn't located it, but listen to what he says before the search starts for the gun near Miller.
I'm going to put this thing down and get my gun.
Whoa, my gun? My gun? How did he do that? How did he know?
He don't seem to be moving, and I got the gun.
Okay, you got it there, wake him up?
Yeah, I got it.
I would submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, that he knew it was his gun because he already knew the plan. It's a slip. It's a slip. And that's why it's hard to try to plan the perfect murder, because you never know. Just like not knowing that Bartlett would be outside, kind of listening for his shots. But it's like the slip about the keys and the safe that Ms. Weckerly brought up. Remember, he takes the report. And he's like, oh, he's got my house. How would you know that? The report's not telling you that. But you magically knew that? You knew it because you gave him the keys. Take these safe keys. I know where that gun is. And that's the slip. The shopping bags. The defense, in their opening, made a huge point of emphasis about the shopping bags. And the state totally agrees. It's really, really important. But not for the reason that they think. Right? They take a look at these bags and go, ah, oh, that's how you know he's a murderer. He wanted the jewelry, right? Look at those two big bags, filled with stuff. Jewelry falling out of it. There's literally jewelry on the toolbox, right? Her watch is there. It's a lot of jewelry. Ladies and gentlemen, when you look at scenes and pictures of this house, how did it look? Did it look tidy or did it look a mess? The state would submit to you, that is a really clean house. Far cleaner than mine. I mean, it's almost like there are things stored away, but everything's kind of put away. But what we have here is a bunch of clothing that don't belong to Sharon and Tom, and all of her jewelry sitting out right by the doorway. So here's the thing. Look, there's more jewelry. Here's the deal. If those bags are right at the doorway doorway into the house, and they're filled and overflowing with Sharon's jewelry, why doesn't Sharon say anything about it when she walks in? Right? She walks in the doorway, she goes, hey, what's all my jewelry doing here? Why didn't that happen? And here's the other thing. Why doesn't the defendant say he notices those bags too when he walks in for the very first time? The state will submit to you. Oh, one other thing to remember. Remember the walkthrough. The defendant says Miller has nothing in his hands in the hallway. Here's the video.
He didn't have anything in his hands, right?
In his hands?
Right. Did he have anything in his hands here?
No.
So, those bags, if you believe his story, they have to be there before. So the burglar decided that he's going to leave them in the closed garage, even though he came through the back door. He's going to put them in the garage for some reason and leave them there. And then Sharon's not going to notice it, and he's not going to notice it. That makes no sense. That makes absolutely no sense. The state would submit to you if either one of them innocently walked in and noticed a pile of their belongings and jewelry spilled out in front of the door, they would have been like, yo, what is that? I'm not going into the house. Maybe something's afoot. But that didn't happen. But the state would submit to you, those bags were not there when Sharon walked in. The state would submit to you, they were never in the garage when Sharon got home. But the state, and here's the thing, that we would argue that the defendant states the shopping bags. That's what they said in their closing. We disagree. That is not our theory. Here's the state's theory on this. Miller's carrying those bags into the garage after he killed Sharon, and he's walking into the garage with the defendant. And then he double-crosses them. That's what we submit to you. The bags appear to be dropped and spilled out because he's caught unawares. Just like the hat's on the ground. Just like the shopping bag's on the ground. Just like one of the shoes has fallen out. Because he's making off with the stuff. Take the jewelry. We'll stage it like a burglary. We'll say somebody came in. He's like, cool, cool, cool. And they're just walking out to the garage. Because that wouldn't be the normal exit point. And then he double crosses them. That's how the bags get there. Here's something. The defendant changes where each revolver is located, depending on whatever interview you're listening to. So, he creates two different locations for the gun near Miller. The first interview, he says it's up in his pants, and in the walkthrough, it's actually up by his left hand.
I went to the bag, looking for the gun, so I didn't see the gun. As it turned out, he was, I guess it was up in his pants or underneath him anyway. He'd fallen on it, and he told me it has to be there. If he had a gun, it has to be there. Carefully roll him over and see if it's there, or something about rolling him over. And I just put my foot on him and up on the shoulder and kind of pushed on him, and he kind of tilted that way. And when he did, then he kind of went like this, and I reached down right here. Let's see, if he was laying this way, it would have been this hand. It would have been this hand. Because he was laying, something like this, but on his head. And when I pushed him over, then his hand dropped down, and it was right here under this hand. He wasn't holding it, but it was in, his hand was right by it. He was holding it, I'm assuming, but he wasn't holding it then. And I picked it up by the, I think by the wood part on it.
Those are two different locations. They couldn't be more different. He also creates two different locations of where he discovered the .38 that killed Sharon that night. Here's what he says in his first interview.
Check on Sharon. So you go up and you check on Sharon. I tried to roll her over. I tried to talk to her. I bent down, and that's when there was the gun was there, because I bent down on it. It was laying somewhere in that vicinity. And
near Sharon.
Near Sharon, yeah. It was actually pretty poster because my name was on it.
He says that he bends down on his knees and he's close to Sharon and he feels the gun next to his knee. That's what he says in that interview. Watch what he says in the walkthrough.
Oh, well, there's a continuation of this.
Okay, and then in the music room, there's another revolver.
That's the one that was right by Sharon. When I went down on my knees, I could feel it. And that's the one I picked up. And I got a little 22 mag, and when you put it on safety, you turn the cylinder.
So, now listen, just 1 week later, listen to what he says here. Now remember, this is the area where Sharon's body is, right? Her head's kind of near that doorway, and that's the general area that she is. Listen to how he describes now discovering the gun.
And I remember the box was under here, and it was slick. I tried to push the box like that back, trying to get the leverage. And there was the other gun, another gun laying right here. And I picked it up. And I don't know why for sure that I was going to check it to see if it was loaded. And I don't know why, because I know guns better than this. I don't know revolvers that much. But I pushed the revolver, the button of the cylinder drops open. And I'm thinking more like a safety button or something. But anyway, I just pushed it, and I could see that the cylinder was starting to come open. So I just closed it back and just threw it back, just dropped it right there, and started doing the chest compulsions, compressions.
Those are two different locations. Again, it's not consistent. And it's strange. But he mentioned something earlier in that video. It's kind of a nice segue. He talks about moving a box. He says, I'm moving a box. And when you look at the video, you can go back and check it. He's moving a box, which is really near that bloody area to the left of Sharon. He says, I'm sliding. He says, it's slick. Right? And he says, and I move that box into the drum room. If you go back and watch it, he slides a bloody box into the drum room. Well, folks, that's the state of what the blood looked like in the drum room. You will notice there is no transfer there. And where's the box? There is no box. There's the gun. But there's a box of food, but it's on the opposite side. And if you notice, it's not covered in blood. There's not transfer there either. These facts are totally wrong. The fire extinguisher. There's a lot of to-do about the fire extinguisher. So, why is this significant? Listen. It's the defendant that brings the fire extinguisher into the equation. He states, that's the reason why I have to shoot him 2 times in the head. It's for that reason. I don't know why the defendant says that. Maybe he thought 2 more headshots of a guy on the ground was excessive. I don't know. But the problem is when you start to fact check, that's where problems happen for the fire extinguisher. This is a super tidy house, so they've been, what, leaving? Presumably, there was no indication this fire extinguisher had just fallen off the wall bracket, but there is a fire extinguisher bracket there. There is a screw kind of hanging out. You have witnesses. You can evaluate their credibility, see if they're making that up or not. You had 2 witnesses talking about it, but they're documenting it. The state would submit to you, I don't believe the Randolphs, if there really were loose things on that garage floor, they're just going to leave it there. If truly that thing fell off months and weeks ago, they probably would have just thrown it in the trash. But the state would submit to you, that's not what happened. I guess maybe Mr. Randolph thought the 2 headshots is just too much. So now I have to come up with something to scare me to make me do it. So he comes up with the fire extinguisher. The problem is it's affixed to the wall. So he pulls it off the wall. And when you look at the gap, if that thing is really hanging on the wall, you would seriously have to tilt that fridge all the way over just to reach it. And then all that other stuff is coming down. The fan, the crock pot, all that stuff. Go look. Just look. It's just a common sense. You look at it. And that's why it doesn't add up.
You're listening to Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph. There's more raw courtroom drama ahead as we bring you unfiltered audio from trial. Join us as we navigate the testimonies, the tension, and the truth behind the headlines. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a minute. More Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph next.
This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
We've all been there. You get paid back for dinner and suddenly you have money in your Venmo balance.
With the Venmo debit card, you can spend your Venmo balance instantly. Plus, you can earn up to 5% cash back at some of your favorite brands.
You're earning cash back on things like groceries, rideshare, online shopping. It's giving responsible. It's giving the friend who somehow always has it together.
So if you're that friend who grabs the concert tickets, books the rideshare, and puts their card down at brunch, this one's for you.
Spend your Venmo balance with a Venmo debit card. No monthly fee, no minimum balance.
Learn more about the Venmo debit card at venmo.com/card. The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. See Venmo stash terms and exclusions at venmo.me/stash terms. Max $100 cash back per month. 5% requires $1,500 in qualifying monthly spend.
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's, mm-hmm. but the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the Strawberry Watermelon Refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer.
We're talking about a total game changer. It's made with Red Bull. It's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're gonna need it. Kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.